and welcome to a WFPL News Special with Louisville Mayor Greg Fisher. I'm Gabe Bullard. We'll start with a conversation on the city budget, which the Metro Council is debating and revising this month. Give us a call with your questions or comments about the latest and leanest city budget, 502-814-8255. That's 502-814-TALK. You can also email news at WFPL.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter and leave a comment at WFPL News. Mayor, thanks for being here.
Great to be here with you, Gabe.
All right, so we'll get started here. Your first city budget came out late last month, and you used a lot of these one-time stopgaps to patch up this $22.5 million shortfall. There were some layoffs, no major layoffs, a little bit of restructuring, but you've called this more creativity than cash. And how's the city going to operate for the next fiscal year underneath a budget that's been kind of pieced around like this?
Oh, I think the budget maintains all the basic services, which was a key focus of ours going in. The other big decision to make was are we going to have a reduction in force, or are we going to ask all of the employees to share a little bit of the pain? So we asked everybody to share some of the cost reduction efforts through some furloughs, some mandatory, some voluntary as well. And then we had some pockets of one-time money that were available to help us on the expense reduction side. So what I've said is we need to address the fundamental problem that we have, which is we have a budget that's structurally imbalanced. In other words, we got our expenses rising a lot faster than our revenue, and that's primarily due to pension costs, health insurance costs. And the only way to get out of this situation is to grow jobs faster. As one way to increase our revenue, or have an increase in taxes, which nobody has any appetite for doing that. So my goal would be during this administration would be to eliminate that structural imbalance. That would be a great achievement.
How do you do things like that? You're going to have to make some pretty significant cuts and changes to what Metro government does, right?
Well, is that just a reminder, by we have to balance the budget by law, and of course we addressed this last budget. It's a $500 million general fund approximately. We had a $22.5 million gap, so we addressed that gap in this last budget. But going into the fiscal year 13 budget, which will be a year from now, I mean, we can already look out and say that we're going to have a $12 to $15 million problem already, unless the economy really takes off in a big way. So we've got to put everything on the table. And as part of the budget address, I just wanted to remind people that we're going to have a problem a year from now, so let's start looking ahead. We give out over $5 million in external agency funding, some of which goes to some tremendously useful organizations that perform the services at much lower costs than what the city would do. But if we're faced with a situation next year where it's either fund this agency or fund public safety, we've got to fund public safety. So I'm encouraging all the external agencies to develop a plan B. If some money from the city's not there, how would you raise that money? So don't know if we're going to have to do that, but if I was in their shoes, I would want to be thinking ahead.
What about internal agencies and departments? Is there a chance that you might look for a private agency or a private company that could do some of those functions better?
Well, that's always part of a process, and to me that's a last step you take. That means our management and leadership really has not stepped up and done as good a job as we can do. If it's not core to our function, certainly that's another way to look at it, but a lot of people look at that as a short-term quick fix. Usually the studies show that midterm, long-term, it doesn't work out that way. So my emphasis on that, and actually you saw some money in the budget, put additional money towards training of our existing employees so that we can become more efficient, deliver services at lower costs. My experience is that the public doesn't mind government spending money as long as it's being spent in a transparent and an efficient way. My goal, as I've stated multiple times, is for our city government here to be recognized amongst the best city governments in the country. And to do that, we need to be the most efficient. We need to be the most customer-sensitive or citizen-sensitive to all of the citizens of Louisville, regardless of what their socioeconomic status is. So we focus on efficiency there.
Is there any plan to do a study or to look at how much it would cost for a private company to do some of the city services and make that comparison?
That's not in, I mean, we don't go at it explicitly with that goal, but when we take a look at efficiency, let's say we're looking at some things in public works right now, we're looking at things with merger 2.0, you know, the process we have in place to say, how can we improve merger, the results of merger, we take a look at what it costs to deliver, let's say, or the cost of recycling for the city versus the cost of recycling outside of the old urban service district. So they're useful benchmarks. We understand the reason behind the gaps, if we're less expensive or more expensive, so that we can, in any event, look to improve and continue to lower cost.
But when is it a problem that some of this data isn't out there right now? Last year, sometime, I had done a story on the difference between the urban services and the what was the old county and how services are provided, what they cost. And your predecessor even said there's not really a firm set of figures showing how much certain things cost. Like, you couldn't put an exact figure on a lot of the services the city provides. Is that a problem that those numbers don't exist?
I would have a different expectation. You know, we're spending X dollars, we're providing Y services. We may not be able to get the cost of service down to the penny, but you can certainly get it down to the dollars, to where we're in the ballpark to know, you know, what's it cost to pick up trash per house in the city. And so you can get that number, but then you also then have to say, well, how dense is the population in a certain area? How many times does a truck roll over the road? So there's all types of costs associated with that, but none of it should be a mystery. You know, we can quantify those things as best we can, so we at least have a theory that we can work off of when we take a look at improving.
And you found with Metro Animal Services, for any number of reasons, clearly the city was confident that a private organization could handle some of those services. Is there a thought that other city functions could go the same way? There might be bids, requests for proposals for other services.
What you hear from me all the time is, you know, I want to keep all options on the table. I mean, our noble goal is just to do the best we can for as many citizens as possible in the most efficient manner. We want to work with our employees. We have about 6,000 employees to be the best in the world at what they do. If there's some obstacle or gap between that objective and what's good for our citizens are, the government is theirs. So if that means that we have to take a different approach, we'll do that. But to me, that's a last step that we'd have to take.
But in 4 years, it will be a smaller metro government?
We'll be more efficient just because we'll always be improving. I hope that we continue to have population increase so we can deliver more services with the same amount of people that we have. But I'm one that's always looking for more quality at lesser cost.
And in your budget speech, you mentioned, and you just said it a few minutes ago, some of these external agencies, there are the social services agencies and there are the arts organizations. For disclosure, WFPL does receive a grant in the budget. And you've told them to come up with a plan B. But given what arts groups receive and given what other parts of the budget have, you know, to compare, I think it's like $500,000 or so goes just to arts groups. And what is it, $400 million goes to public safety? Can you really compare those and say you'd rather cut this very, very small amount versus this amount that's hundreds of times larger?
Yeah, public safety is more in the neighborhood of $150 million. Regardless, it is a significantly larger multiple. The point is that if anybody's relying on the government right now, whether it's the federal government, state government, or city government, that is not a good position to have your agency in. With all of the pressures on government right now and with the resistance toward increasing fees or taxes, if you're a responsible steward of your agency, you should be thinking, okay, how much money does FPL get, do you know?
I believe $19,000.
Okay. If we don't get that $19,000 from Metro government, where are we going to get it? That needs to be a question that you all are going through as one of your possible scenarios. I just don't want a situation to happen where you're cut off and then we say, oh my gosh, nobody even mentioned that to us before. I don't know if it's going to happen, but if I'm in charge of planning for your organization, I want to be thinking about that.
Do you think that money is out there in the community? Alan Cowan, the former CEO of Fund for the Arts, I talked with him when they were kicking off this latest campaign, and he said, essentially, when I asked him about the totals, he said, if there's more money out there, we would have raised it.
Well, it depends on if people like the services that you're giving, and are you reaching them the right way? I mean, if you're doing something that people value, you're going to get some money for doing it. We as a city like to help where we can, but again, my legal duty is to balance the budget. So if it comes down to basic city services versus a nice to have, it's going to go to basic city services. All that being said, as you know, I am a huge advocate for the arts. Arts are the quality of life in a city. It's super important that we have arts in a very vibrant way here. We have a good corporate community that supports arts. So I'm there for the arts. Don't mistake what I'm saying. But when it comes to basic city services or non-basic, we're going to fund basic city services first.
Is there any plan to maybe work with some of these groups? You'd mentioned public-private partnerships in the past, but I think there's a lot of concern out there in the arts community in general. You know, the orchestra is having problems getting enough donations, and that's the orchestra. So I would think that a lot of people would say, if the orchestra is struggling, what chance, you know, does River City Drum Corps have without this support in the community showing up? Is there any plan, you know, if these funds have to be cut from the city, is there a plan to work with them to help them find that money?
Well, I think the key question for every agency is, you know, using my business lingo, is, you know, what's your value proposition? And the River City Drum Corps has a very different strategic positioning than WFPL does. There are people that will be attracted to what the River City Drum Corps does. They're a fantastic group, and they do, you know, not only obviously provide entertainment, but they also do youth development at the same time at a very efficient cost. So they have different people that they need to reach to and find. But if we get to a point where it looks like there'll be significant scale backs across the board, I think you have a good idea there, is how can we bring everybody together and say, let us help you think about Plan B. But that's not so much our responsibility as it is giving everybody a heads up on this. But again, I don't want to have to do this. It's just a scenario as we look out at in the future where expenses are exceeding revenue.
Right. And knowing that, I'll mention one of your supporters, Christy Brown, said at the Louisville Forum recently that politicians have to be held accountable on every level to support the arts. But how could the city support the arts without those grants? What other ways could there be?
The city has a lot of in-kind activity, obviously, when, you know, just providing security or traffic or creating an environment where the parks are open to the arts. It's, we communicate with the world about what type of city that we are, so that communication is important relative to arts. So money is one way to do that, and obviously that's what everybody focuses on. But the way we brand our city and provide our city services certainly is a big part of that.
There was also talk at that Louisville Forum about the arts tax, and that's something that had been discussed a little bit in the campaign. What are your thoughts on that, and a small surcharge that might go to support arts groups or even other social services agencies?
From the development community or CVB or what?
I believe it's often taken the form of, for example, a tax on, say, hotel rooms, something like that.
Right. So the CVB, or Convention and Visitors Bureau, supports the arts in a couple different ways right now. You could look at increasing the bed tax, and that's what they where they get most of their money from, by a percent or two to create a conglomerate fund that helps support the arts. Of course, what they always look at is, you know, if we're charging 14% here and it's 13% in Nashville and all of our competitive set, we can't go up. But that certainly is a tool that can be looked at. A lot of it the city needs to decide, and our citizens need to decide, you know, who do we want to be? What are we willing to pay for? Is it something we as citizens want to pay for, or do we put it off on a bed tax or a rental car tax? There's different ways to approach all these things where people say, the arts is really important to us, as we're talking about right here, and we're willing to pay for that. Right now, the message that we constantly get from people is, we want as much as we can get, but we don't want to pay for anything. You know, and this is what, not just a city issue, it's a state and federal issue as well. So these are important issues when we look to our city and how we're going to grow. You can take a look at our infrastructure as a city. You know, we have some challenges of infrastructure that's in a state of disrepair right now. And we've got a shoestring budget. At some point, something's got to give here in terms of how we're going to keep everything up, and or do we want to make a major investment in our arts, for instance, to make a big statement to the country. So these are the type of dialogues and conversation the community needs to have to define who we are.
So it sounds like you're setting a list of priorities, and as Metro government is becoming more efficient or spending less money to be in line with revenues in this new economy, you're going to have this list, and if something is lower on the list, so be it. There's only so much money.
Well, that's a good way to put it. You got basic services, number one. And then we'll prioritize after that. And maybe after the break, we can talk about the economic development strategy, which is the growth strategy for the community that will give us some additional revenue to attack other things other than just the basics.
And that does take us to a break. More with Mayor Greg Fisher in just a minute. Feel free to call or email your comment or a question for the mayor, 502-814-8255, news@WFPL.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter at WFPL News. What do you want to know? What's your question or comment about discretionary spending in the city? You're listening to a WFPL News special.
Support for WFPL comes from Smithberry Winery, celebrating summer and the re-release of Estate Chambosin with dinner and a concert this Saturday with the Motown sounds of Leo Knight and the Moonlighters. Details at smithberrywinery.com or 888-845-7091. Smithberry Winery, celebrating Kentucky's unbridled spirit. From Baptist Hospital East's Baby Steps, a resource for the little questions that come with your little bundle of joy. For more information or to register, baptisteast.com/babysteps. From Bellarmine University, offering 13 advanced degree programs to help advance your career. The Bellarmine University Graduate School Fair is June 14th at 6 p.m. More at 272-7200 or bellarmine.edu. Listening to Louisville's NPR News Station, 89.3 WFPL.
And welcome back to a WFPL News special. I'm Gabe Bullard. Joining us this hour is Louisville Mayor Greg Fisher. We're talking about the city budget. Feel free to call or write with your comment, 502-814-8255, news@WFPL.org. Mayor, we were talking about the budget, and I'd like to get into discretionary spending. That's something that's been in the news for quite a while. And first of all, does the mayor's office have a discretionary account?
You're talking about NDF and CIF funds?
Yeah, like something similar in the mayor's office.
I have a discretionary budget of, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $40,000.
And do you use that? What's that used for?
So I had half of that for this existing fiscal year. I think I've used maybe $1,000 or $2,000. It would be for things that for some reason had some appeal to me. I offered to spend some money on a youth leadership development activity, for instance, but I think it's there just for special circumstances. I cut my budget, by the way.
Is that a fund that you think needs to exist? Does the executive branch need to have that spending power, or should that be on the legislature?
Well, I put together the whole budget at $500 million, and then with all the federal and state funds, it's over $700 million. So to have a little discretionary spending for areas that pop up outside of the budget from time to time that might be priorities in the scope of our budget, if it wasn't there, it wouldn't be the end of the world for me, but I don't think it's inappropriate given the size of the budget.
And you've said about the Metro Council, they have their two funds, that about $175,000 that they can spend in the fiscal year. You've talked with them, and you said you have to have a talk in the future about that discretionary money. What's that talk? People are calling for these funds to be cut. People are calling for changes in the oversight. What sort of conversation are you going to have?
Well, let me emphasize that the Metro Council is... It's not like me having to call them to task. They're having conversations all the time already on how to make sure these funds are spent in appropriate and transparent ways. You saw that my Office of Management and Budget is putting in place a transparency and accountability process for the funds so that if they're not accounted for, the next quarterly allotment of whatever that fund was will not be let loose. So we're shortening down the cycle time of accountability, if you will, so things can't go on and be a certain problem. So
the money couldn't roll over?
Well, let's say that Gabe gets $10,000 for a certain project, $2,500 per quarter. If you have not submitted your receipts after the first quarter justifying this grant you received, you're not going to get the second quarter. So it stops right there. So if there was any issue and there wasn't some accountability for it, it doesn't go on a whole year. It stops short term.
So with that address, we uncovered there's $2.8 million that has just been rolling over and rolling over in unused CIF funds that the council doesn't have earmarked for anything. They say it's for a project that may come up if certain districts need certain things, but this would eliminate that, eliminate the ability for the council to do that.
Well, that would be a different category. What I'm talking about is for grants that have already been let. So in this case right here, that's just some unallocated funds that have not been used so far.
Should that be changed, though, that it rolls over like that? Should the council be allowed to accrue $2.8 million if it's not being spent?
Well, we could use it in the general fund, obviously. And from their perspective, they're waiting, I guess, to see if they have some good projects that they want the money to be spent on. When I had my budget address to the city, just as I talked to external agencies, I talked to the Metro Council, and again, I want to accentuate here that this is a two-way dialogue. It's not me saying, hey, you guys got to do this. They say, we know that we need to be accountable, and we need to be transparent as well. Those are funds that they have had since we've merged. I know there's some data gathering going on right now. Do other cities, Metro Councils, have funds like this? What is the standard practice? How are they spent? So they're in the process of doing all that, and I would think over the course of the next year there'll be some changes made.
Does that mean cutting the funds? There are a lot of cities that get along without this. They fund their projects through other means.
Could be. You know, I know that there's goodwill and open minds on behalf of the Metro Council to make sure that we're serving their districts and our city well. They're gathering information. There's nobody digging in any type of political way. We just want to understand what the best practice is and execute that here.
And as you, this review of Metro government goes on in both, you know, the Merger 2.0 task force and looking to scale things down or make the government more efficient, how much should the council change? Essentially, the structure now, a lot of people say the council member is the president of their district, that they're able to allocate the money, they're able to do all these things. Should that be the way it actually is for a legislative body?
Well, this is one of the reasons why we have a task force called Merger 2.0. It's to ask a lot of these questions. You know, from a governmental standpoint, our merged metro government is in its infancy. You know, it's 8.5 years old right now. You can certainly make the argument that the Metro Council person is the closest person to the action in their district. There's 26 Metro Council people. They should know more what the needs are of that district than anybody else. So you could make an argument that their ability to allocate funds in their project is being very close to what the needs of the citizens are. As long as there's oversight, accountability, and transparency on how the funds are being used.
Has the Merger 2.0 Task Force said anything about these discretionary funds?
The Merger 2.0 Task Force is in its month two or so, and it's going to have about a nine-month timeline. So it's very early in terms of what they're looking at. We're looking at public safety. We're looking at infrastructure. We're looking at some big-picture issues. There's multiple task force now working on different sub-areas for the city. So I'm not sure if we're looking at this particular area.
And on another merger and budget-related issue, we have a call coming in from Craig. He's downtown. Hello, Craig.
Yes.
Yeah, you have a question about EMS?
Yes, I was just wondering. Louisville Fire was, and EMS was once part of the same, under the same umbrella, and then Mayor Abramson separated them. Do you plan on looking at putting them back together with the fire department to save money?
That's one of the issues that's being looked at is the whole issue of fire and EMS. And thanks for the question, Craig. Not only are we delivering both of those services the best way possible, EMS countywide, but then you also have the suburban fire district area where you're seeing some financial challenges with some of the suburban fire districts. So fire and EMS is a specific area that we're looking at just to see how we can perform it better, but there certainly are no conclusions. Or I enter these task force and problem-solving issues with a totally open mind. I don't have any preconditions. We want to assess what the current state is and how we're doing. Are people satisfied? What's the best in the country? Are there some things that we can change to improve? And then that's what we're going to recommend.
And do you have any thoughts, though, when these task force are formed of what you'd like to happen other than just an improvement in performance?
Well, I know what I'd like for them to look at. For instance, Craig's call is really one of my top issues. You know, it's fire and EMS, and it's suburban fire, and it's city fire. You know, are we protecting our citizens to the best possible way, whether they're in the old urban service district or outside of that? And That's what the important issue is. So I say that's the issue. Now, let's pull together the brightest minds we have here in the community and around the country if we need to do that and come up with the best solution. But I don't have a preconceived notion. Otherwise, I wouldn't call a task force.
And going back to some of the council spending and these funds, you've offered, essentially, a swap of the CIF funds for these federal mapping funds. How many council members have stepped forward to take that?
Jim King is the president of the Metro Council right now, and I've got a good relationship with Jim. You know, I'll come up with an idea. He'll improve it. He'll come up with something. We'll improve it. Nobody cares where the improvement ideas come from. His concept with the mapping funds, $1.3 million, was to say, I don't know if I can get, you know, $50,000 per each of the 26 districts, but he felt confident that amongst all the 26 districts, they could come up with $1.3 million. So he's gone through the process of surveying all the different Metro Council areas. Some need more than 50, or some will use more than 50, others will use less than 50. So the important thing to me is the total, and I feel pretty confident that they'll be coming up with the total and appreciate their teamwork on that.
And speaking of the council and spending, have you been following the ethics hearings for Councilwoman Judy Green?
Not in depth, just kind of at the headline level.
And are you concerned at all?
Well, I'm concerned any time there's an allegation in the community from anybody that things are not working as they should be, regardless of it's a Metro Council or if it's the mayor or anybody. So the important thing is that we have a process like we have right now to investigate those things, let everybody have their fair say on what happens, don't prejudge people, and then live with the outcome of that.
What's your relationship with Councilwoman Green?
She's a Metro Council, obviously, member, obviously, so I'm interested in the well-being of her district and in her constituencies, her constituents. I've known her for several years, and, you know, she's a nice person and tries to do the best job every day, and let's hope this works out okay for her.
And have you talked to her at all as this has been going on since these charges have come forward?
Not specifically related to this. Obviously, there's been some issues in her district like there are in every district. We were together just yesterday, as a matter of fact, at a meeting on the West Louisville Business Associations that I was addressing.
And one reason I ask, your father and your sister worked on your campaign, contributed to Councilwoman Green's reelection campaign in the primary last year against Ray Barker, who brought one of the two ethics charges forward against Councilwoman Green. Were you aware of that? And does it influence your views?
No, it certainly doesn't influence my views. Judy is a hardworking person that they knew during the campaign, so apparently they wanted to contribute to her, but that doesn't influence me at all.
And had you been aware that they had done that?
Yes.
And have you talked to the other council members about this ethics hearing?
Not in any depth. I mean, that's their issue. I mean, that's their hearing and that's their forum, and they should conduct that, and I don't want to interfere in their business.
And this is something, there are processes going on outside of the Ethics Commission. A ruling, by the way, is expected, I believe, Friday on one of the charges. And have you talked with the special counsel or the county attorney, that's the special counsel being brought in by Jim King and other members of the Metro Council? Have you talked with him or have you talked with the county attorney about this at all, about how things might play out?
No. Again, I mean, this is the Metro Council's business, and there are certain things that they take care of, and there are certain things that I have responsibility for. So I watch the process and make sure it's unfolding the way like it appears it should be, and it certainly seems like the process is being followed properly here.
Depending on the ruling, would you get involved at all in working with the council to act upon rulings coming from the Ethics Commission?
If they ask me to help, I'll certainly step in and provide that. But again, they have it under control.
So this is something that they should just handle by themselves, apart from the mayor's office?
That's their responsibility, and they're handling it.
All right. And we have another call coming in. We have Vicki in Corbin. She's bringing up animal services again. Hello, Vicki.
Hello. Mr. Mayor, my daughter was a volunteer for 2 years and is now a current Metro Animal Service employee. She's dedicated, compassionate, and committed. She frequently, on her days off, drives rescue transports. She's driven twice, one way, 13 hours to New York to save these animals' lives. I've been to Manslick. I sponsor Metro Animal Service dogs for rescue. And after reading an outline for the No Kill Louisville bid, I'm extremely impressed with it. I understand Jessica Reed is not even asking for a salary, and the coalition, which includes Woodstock, Shamrock, Shelby County, Derby City Dogs Rescue, are all currently at the forefront of saving many of the animals. I just want to encourage you to please accept the No-Kill Louisville bid. Thank you.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. I've heard about your daughter driving 13 hours, so please let her know we appreciate that. There's a lot of really dedicated, passionate people in the animal services community, which is outstanding. We are committed from the city standpoint to getting down our euthanasia rate. You know, our goal is no adoptable pet should be euthanized. It's going to take a while to get there. When you take a look around the country, there are cities that do far worse than we do, and there are cities that do far better than what we do. So our goal with animal services, just like any of our agencies, is to be amongst the best in the country at that. We'll be looking at the No-Kill Louisville proposal. We're taking 2 weeks to take a look at all these things where we're at right now, and we'll evaluate where we're at there. So the goal has got to be to reach our goal of no adoptable pet should be euthanized, and we're taking a look at all of the proposals in that regard, or the proposal in that regard.
And I talked with your spokesman, Chris Pointer, about this yesterday. He said it's unlikely you'd open up the bidding process again if No-Kill Louisville's bid isn't accepted. What is the plan B that he talked about that would have to be worked on?
I would assume a plan B that he'd be talking about is, I've always said, we got to keep all of our options open. If the No-Kill proposal doesn't meet the requirements, or there's not the experience behind the proposal, whatever it might be, then we'll have to look at it again. You know, is there an interim plan? Should we go back at looking at hiring a director? Are there some other partnerships that we could have in the community that are less strong than a full-on fiduciary partnership? But the key to me is that we just keep moving toward improving our animal services here.
Were you surprised that only No-Kill Louisville submitted a bid, that the Kentucky Humane Society, some groups from out of state, didn't end up with a proposal?
I mean, we were hoping for several people to, or several organizations to bid. They didn't, so we have to deal with that, and we'll take a look at the No-Kill proposal and see where we go from there.
And also, speaking of the No-Kill proposal, Ruth in the Highlands is on the line. Hello, Ruth.
Hi.
Yes, you had a question about No-Kill Louisville?
I do. I work with No-Kill Louisville as well as my own rescue organization. And my question is to Mayor Fisher and some of the other people who are reviewing this proposal, have you read the No-Kill model? Have you educated yourself in what makes the No-Kill model work?
Yeah, the team that we put together to write the report obviously has a lot of folks that are very active in the animal services community. And they wrote the review or audit, if you will, of animal services. I mean, I'm familiar with the general goals of no kill for the community. And a lot of the goals that we set forth for animal services were developed around the best practices for animal services in the country, which certainly is, you know, trying to minimize the euthanasia rate for all of our animals.
And you mentioned the audit of Louisville Metro Animal Services, or the review. You ordered another review yesterday of MSD, the Metro Sewer District, and Elizabeth in St. Matthews has a comment about the MSD review. Hello, Elizabeth?
Yes. Thank you very much for taking my call. Mayor, I am very, very distressed with what I read in the Courier-Journal this morning about the top MSD employees getting bonuses of up to 14%. And we are a community of shared sacrifice, I thought. And I think this is outrageous. I'm a senior citizen, and we all have to have water. We're looking at the global problems with water. But right here in our city, we are so blessed. And then to read this, that the MSD top employees are wanting these huge bonuses. Is there anything you can do about this to rescind these and void these bonuses?
Well, I hope you're happy with a review that's going to be taking place then. So just to clarify, Gabe, mm-hmm. I cannot order a review. I appoint the board members to MSD, but they're an independent agency. So working with Bud Chardine, who's the executive director, and Mr. Celentano, who's the chairman, together, we said there are questions about MSD, and these folks do a lot of good work every day. We need to remove the questions. Let's do an outside management review, management audit of processes and procedures, and see what we can find so we can improve the delivery of services for all of our citizens. We asked Crit Llewellyn, the state auditor, to help us with that process as well. So her office is going to help us, or help MSD and help us determine what the best method to go about this is. So I can't order that. I suggested it, and Bud Chardine in the chair wholeheartedly adopted that. So that's the good news.
You've said before that you wanted every city department and even a department attached to the city like MSD to be reviewed in the course of your year or so in office. Did this MSD audit or review, your request for this, did that get pushed up sooner than you had expected for it to happen because of some of the reports on what was happening with MSD?
Well, what I'd like to get done is have everybody reviewed in 2 years. I mean, there's a lot of different departments and agencies, 2025. And trying to develop a culture, we are, that when you get a review, look at that as an opportunity for improvement. When you review anybody, you're going to find some things that can be improved. And we're not out to get you. We're not out to fire people. We're out to say, what can we do better that we're not doing right now? And frequently, a third party can help identify those things. So any healthy organization that's got a good improvement orientation accepts reviews and says, that's fine. We're not perfect. Let's find what we can work on, and let's do a better job. And that's the way MSD's approached this audit, which I was delighted for them to do so. There's been some questions about MSD in the press lately. It becomes a distraction to them because everybody's saying, what about this? What about that? They should be focused on delivering the best service they can for the public. So it's in their best interest to go ahead and attack this like they're going to identify any issues if they are out there and then address them.
As you've come in and started kind of getting used to being mayor and studying these departments, have you discovered any sort of lack of oversight? WFPL here, we had been seeking some records of audits done by MSD of MSD, and we're told that essentially it's just counting, you know, pens and pencils in the desks and tools on the trucks. Have you been surprised at all that some of these departments are not really keeping an eye on themselves the way they probably should be?
Well, MSD recently was audited, and I hope you have that information. That's publicly available, and that's certainly a lot more than what you're portraying it at. I mean, that's the finances that come into MSD, how the money is spent, so it's a normal audit that would be done by auditing standards.
Right. We were told this was MSD when it keeps track of its own functions. They have an auditor on staff, and this is the reports that they produce.
I will be shocked, and they would not pass a standard audit if they didn't have internal controls that were, you know, commonly accepted best business practices. So I would suggest that you read the audit that was put forth last, the public audit.
All right, and this is going to take us to our next break. You're listening to a WFPL News special. More with Mayor Greg Fisher in just a minute. Feel free to call or write with your comment or question. We're going to get to bridges, other construction projects, and jobs. 502-814-8255. News at WFPL.org. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter as well at WFPL News. You're listening to a WFPL News special.
Support for WFPL comes from the Crazy Daisy Antique Mall. Striving to fill the wants but not necessarily the needs of Louisville, the 20,000-square-foot mall features antique and vintage furniture, jewelry, and collectibles. The Crazy Daisy Antique Mall opens 7 days a week at 1430 Melwood Avenue in Butchertown. From Indiana University Southeast to New Albany, where students can earn an IU bachelor's or master's degree in more than 50 degree programs like business, education, nursing, the arts, or the sciences. Details at ius.edu. From Green Bean Delivery, an online home delivery service for organic produce and natural groceries, creating an avenue for local farmers and artisans while striving to make healthy, local, and sustainably grown foods accessible and convenient for all of Greater Louisville. Information at greenbeandelivery.com. You're listening to Louisville's NPR news station, 89.3 WFPL.
And welcome back to a WFPL news special. I'm Gabe Bullard. With us today is Louisville Mayor Greg Fisher. We're talking about, we've talked about the budget. We're going to get into some other topics here, so feel free to call or write. We're going to talk about construction projects, bridges, and other related topics. 502-814-8255, news at WFPL.org, or WFPL News on Facebook or Twitter. Mayor, wanted to bring up the Bridges Project. For a long time, this wasn't much of an issue. It came up during the election and kind of faded away. It hasn't really been at the forefront of a lot of discussions. But for years, everyone was told the project was untouchable. It was an East End bridge that was this size, a downtown bridge that was this size, and Spaghetti Junction rebuilt, reconfigured in a certain way, and it wouldn't change. But it's changing. It has to change to be workable at this point.
Absolutely. The two major things that I've heard while I was campaigning was the bridges cost too much and we don't want to have tolls on existing infrastructure. And we all know the broad overlay of constrained interstate traffic coming through Louisville, which is one of the busiest through points in the country. So we need the bridges. So I met with Governor Daniels and Governor Beshear in late December, right before I took office, and all three of us were hearing the same thing as well. So we asked the Ohio River Bridges Authority to look at different ways that we could streamline the costs. We asked the Departments of Transportation to do the same thing. We've had a couple different announcements in terms of how to take cost out of the project, including the announcement last week where we've taken $1.2 billion out of the project. So it's now only $2.9 billion. Gabe, it's amazing how that sounds, doesn't it? And so hopefully that's going to help in terms of lessening the tolls. I think the cost is going to go down even more when we put out a request for proposals and let the private sector come to work and come up with their ideas on the project as well. We had an innovation forum in Louisville in February. We had 800 people from around the world come together. They're all big infrastructure experts. So I think we're doing a good job of value engineering the project, keeping the needed functionality and safety, but driving this down to a more doable project.
And that $1.2 billion savings, more than predicted, it's a huge amount of savings on the project, cutting it down more than a quarter of the cost. You coming from this entrepreneurial background, doesn't it inspire you, though, to maybe want to innovate more with the design to see how else you could save money?
It's not stopped. The Departments of Transportation are continuing to look at it. I think when the private sector gets involved, they're going to want to try to figure out how to have a shorter construction time frame that will take out costs for them as well. So that's why I'm encouraged. Yes, I'm a business person, an entrepreneur, and so all this work has been done outside of the private sector so far. So I hope that we're going to have further cost reduction.
Do you think the design should be changed more?
Well, you've got to balance. Obviously, it's got to be safe, and it's got to have enough functionality to meet our traffic needs for the next 30 or 40 years. So those are your constraints. So I'm not a traffic engineer, and I'm not one to second guess and act like I'm an expert in everything. We got some good people working on this.
But you are open to looking at further design changes if they could achieve the goal but cut the costs.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if they're defended from a safety and transportation standpoint, we'll look at everything.
Any thoughts on commissioning some more studies to look at that?
Well, the Departments of Transportation are looking at that. And then again, when there's requests for proposals, there'll be some other ideas that come out from that. So while it's been out of the headlines, it's been something that we've been working on a weekly basis. So there's all kinds of folks working on this project.
And also on the transportation note, we have an email from Ken. He writes that one of the first cuts you made in the budget was eliminating funding for the downtown transport center, which would have provided lockers and space for bike riders and eventually plug-in gear for electric vehicles. He says it seemed like a small investment for what could be a very large payoff further down the road. He just wanted to hear your explanation of what's happening with that.
Yeah, I think he might have some bad information there. That was in the budget last year, and that was not removed. It's just not been activated. So a final site has not been selected, and nor the functionality of that center as well. So their money is still in the budget. That's just carryover budget from a prior year.
So that money is still there. It could be used if everything is worked out.
That's correct. We just want the right site and the right functionality for it.
And what's being done to determine that?
Not much right now. We have the prior study that's done, so that's sitting on a shelf. That's not an active project that we have. I wish I could say, you know, it's been studied to the nth degree and ready to go, but this is a job where you've got a lot of things coming at you, and you balance that with the proactive stuff that you've got going out as well, and that just has not been at the top of the priority list, but it'll be addressed.
And we're getting a lot of comments in from email and Twitter, again, on the Bridges Project. What to you would be an unacceptable amount for tolls on the project?
What I've been saying is, you know, you've got, we're going to have a couple different tolls. One, you'll have, you know, the frequent traveler, so that would be the commuter. You'd have somebody that just happens to be passing through town, which is well over half of the traffic, I believe. Then you're going to have a multi-axle toll as well for trucks. I would think, when I talk to folks, if they're saying, look, if this thing's a dollar or so, no problem. We can handle that. That's for the frequent commuter toll. If it gets much more over that, I think there'll be quite a bit of public outcry.
What role did the public outcry play in pushing some of these changes? There was a lot of dissent on the idea of tolls being any higher than a dollar.
What anybody that's serving in an elected capacity should be listening to what the needs of the community are. The primary feedback was no tolling on the Sherman-Minton Bridge because it's a different approach into the city versus where the new bridges are being built or will be built. So that seemed to be pretty reasonable, and so we took that off the table. So it's good for people to get engaged in the process and for everybody to have their voices heard. The main thing that we hear is just, can we get this built? You know, it's been 40 or 41 years now since this project was first started, and our competitor cities to us love the fact that Louisville is still talking about building bridges 40-plus years after we first had this conversation, because when national investments are made, they're not looking to make them in a place where it takes 40 years to make a decision. Now, we've got to have due diligence, we've got to have a conversation, but it's time to build these bridges.
And are you disappointed at all that the federal support hasn't come through the way at times it had been expected to?
Well, disappointed, you've got to be based in reality, you know, so it would be great if we had all kinds of money thrown at this project from the federal government, but that's not reality. And it doesn't look like it's going to be reality for quite some time, so you've got to deal with what the current situation is. And that means we've got to figure out a way to pay for this, and that'll be a combination of some federal money, some state money, and then some user fees.
And speaking of federal support to pay for something, we have Chaz on the line in St. Matthews. He has a question about Museum Plaza. Chaz?
Hi, Mayor Fisher. I was wondering if you could talk about Museum Plaza. It seems like a project that had renewed optimism around it with the announcement of the HUD loan application. It has since then kind of fallen off, and I heard there was a meeting yesterday down at the 21C Hotel. What do you know about that project? Is it a project that's dead in the water? Is it something that everyone is still hoping they can get complete?
There's a lot of hope around Museum Plaza. The developers behind that are fantastic community citizens. Obviously, they are the folks behind the 21C. They also stepped up and helped with the Whiskey Row Iron Quarter project. And Museum Plaza will be an iconic architectural statement for our city. That this project will be probably the most talked about construction project from an architectural standpoint globally when it's launched. So it'll be to a tremendous benefit for our city and provide some much needed Class A office space as well. So the critical issue to getting that done is a loosening up of the financial markets, in particular the lending climate, which, as you know, has been very, very tight the past several years. Now, it's starting to loosen up right now. So almost all the financing is in place except for some financing that needs to come from some banks. I think it's about a quarter, 20% of the lending that, or the total amount that's still outstanding. Conversations are taking place there, I believe, between the developers and the lending institutions. So I'm optimistic. It'd be 4,000 construction jobs. The construction jobs are really where we're hurting right now. There's just not a lot going on in the city right now, but there's a whole lot of big projects in the pipeline. And so I'm hopeful, and the city will do anything it can to help Museum Plaza in a responsible way.
What's the timeline for that? Is there a deadline for the developers to get this money secured?
Not that I'm aware of. I know that they're working real hard on it on a daily basis, and you know it'll happen when they can get all their funds together, but they certainly have the capacity to do a project like this.
And have you been involved in any of those conversations with lenders?
I let them know about the city's support. I certainly share the conversation or the encouragement from Sean Donovan, who's the HUD secretary in Washington, D.C., with his stated support for the project as well. So we encourage the lenders to help us out here in Louisville.
And moving on to another topic here, tied to the budget, this is the largest budget shortfall for merged government right now. The the budget deals with, and you've created four new offices, sustainability, or are planning to create four new offices, sustainability, globalization, innovation, and military affairs, totally new offices. One, how do you plan to pay for them?
Well, don't look at them as offices, look at them as directors, their individual positions. So what's really important is that we've got to look ahead and say, how are we going to grow as a community? We've grown 50,000 people in the last decade. I want to see us grow more than that as well, so we've got to smartly invest. If we just put our head in the sand and say, woe is me, times are tough, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. I'm not going to do that. So we've got to identify those areas where we feel like we have some growth potential for the community to grow jobs here, start companies here, attract companies here, and that's what gives us the revenue, obviously, to provide the services that we need. So each one of these directors will have job-creating responsibility around areas that are unique to our strengths as a community, either people or place. The innovation director, in particular, is in charge for breakthrough, helping the various city departments think about breakthrough improvement, as well as helping with some of our economic development strategies.
And we have about 30 seconds here. What are the benchmarks for these new offices? Have those been developed at this point, or for these new directors?
Ultimately, it's going to come down to job creation.
And but is there a set of criteria? You know, you would know if the Office for Globalization has done its job when X is done and when X improves.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, those are in development, but any of these positions I recommend all have a set of clearly defined metrics behind them that we'll be able to evaluate whether they succeeded or failed, and I certainly plan on them succeeding.
All right, and that's all the time we have for today. I'd like to thank our guest, Mayor Greg Fisher. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
And this call-in news special was produced by the WFPL news staff. Full audio and more information is at WFPL.org. A note also that Metro TV is filming today's show. WFPL news specials air Saturday nights at 8 on Insight Channel 25. I'm Gabe Bullard.
WFPL invites you to join us June 18th at Iroquois Park for the Walk for Public Radio. Sponsored by Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield, the 2011 Rock and Stroll features a 5K walk around the Iroquois Loop and ends with a concert featuring Ben Sully and David Mead at the amphitheater. Additional support is provided by Blue Moon. More information is available at WFPL.org.